This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. The field of candidates for Cincinnati City Council in next year's election expanded by one today. Former councilmember Kevin Flynn launched his campaign in a bid to return to City Hall. He vows to restore trust there. Questions of leadership, transparency, trust, and even criminality have arisen all year long as three council members have been arrested on federal corruption charges. One, now former council member, Tamaya Denard, pleaded guilty and was sentenced to 18 months in prison. Councilman Jeff Pastor and P.G. Sittenfeld, who's also running for mayor, have both pleaded not guilty. For Sittenfeld, the charges are different, and one local law professor thinks they may represent prosecutorial overreach. I spoke with that professor yesterday. Here is our recorded conversation. And joining us now is Ken Katkin. He's a professor of law at Chase College of Law at Northern Kentucky University. He teaches legislation and constitutional law. Ken, thank you for taking some time to be with us.
Oh, I'm pleased to be here.
Well, we're glad you could join us. I took great interest in the op-ed you penned for CityBeat, the alt-weekly here in town, where you questioned whether there is prosecutorial overreach taking place in the Justice Department as it relates to the charges against Cincinnati City Councilman P.G. Sittenfeld. I want to read a brief excerpt from what you wrote, Ken. Quote, unlike in most public corruption cases, no one alleges here that any of the $40,000 at issue wound up in Sittenfeld's pocket or in anyone else's, nor does the indictment allege that the size of these donations exceeds federal campaign contribution limits, nor in fact does the indictment allege that any of the funds were spent unlawfully. Why is that important?
Well, it's important because I think it does show that this is a somewhat unusual prosecution, that it is really typically when you see public officials prosecuted on corruption charges, you typically have some allegation that some of the money wound up in the pockets of those politicians or of someone that they diverted it to, as in fact we saw in the indictments of the other two city council members who were indicted this year. So I think it's noteworthy because it raises questions about whether this is a typical kind of prosecution.
And so when we think about the characterization of these contributions as bribes, as the federal prosecutors have characterized them, do you think that's inaccurate?
Yeah, I think it's inaccurate. I think that when I think of a bribe, I think of a bribe where the politician is actually personally benefiting from the money in ways that are not going into lawful political campaign funds or political action committee funds. So I do think it's inaccurate.
And so when we think about what this money was going towards, we're talking about a development. And you write in your op-ed that P.G. Sittenfeld has a long, consistent stance of being pro-development. That influences the way that you see this conversation taking place, even though Councilman Sittenfeld was recorded, according to prosecutors, as having said it's going to be a yes vote, without a doubt, and that, quote, I can deliver the vote. So you don't see that as a quid pro quo.
He didn't say it's going to be a yes vote without a doubt. That's what the FBI's confidential witness said. That's not what Sittenfeld said. The FBI told the cooperating witness, who was the Bengal defensive end, told him to use those words with Sittenfeld in hopes that Sittenfeld would agree.
No, you're correct. That was a quote from Ndukwe in a conversation. You note in the op-ed that Sittenfeld may have recognized that what road they were going down in that conversation would have been illegal. And we're going to talk about that, but we do have Sittenfeld in a recorded conversation as being quoted saying, I can deliver the votes.
Yeah, he said he could deliver votes in favor of the proposal that Ndukwe was presenting, but he did not in any way condition that on the receipt of a donation, right? So he was, as many politicians would do, he was saying that he is an effective politician, and that because he's an effective politician, he is someone that is worthy of receiving political donations. That's the general basis upon which politicians ask for political donations. They ask people to donate to them if they support the things that the donors support and if they're effective at achieving their goals. So I think for this to be bribery, You know, the question, the way the question was posed to Sittenfeld, if I give you the money, will this be a sure thing? Sittenfeld says, no, you know, that would be an illegal quid pro quo. We're not going to do anything illegal. I know you didn't mean to do anything illegal. I'm support these kind of development projects, whether or not you donate, because I always support these kind of development projects. And I think that's how all politicians raise money. They ask for money from people who support the same things that they support.
We're talking with Ken Katkin. He's a professor of law at Chase College of Law at Northern Kentucky University. He teaches legislation and constitutional law. Ken, we should note that you have contributed to P.G. Sittenfeld's campaign and that you've met a few times and that you're both graduates of Princeton University and have become familiar with one another somewhat through the Alumni Association.
Yeah, I first met P.G. Sittenfeld through the Princeton Club of the Ohio Valley and when he first returned to town. In 2012 or 2013, and I gave small contributions to his first council race and to his 2015 attempt to get the Democratic nomination for U.S. Senate. I'm sure I never gave him more than $200. I don't believe I gave him any money after 2015 for any of his later races, and I've only met him about half a dozen times in my life and have not spoken to him at all in the entire year 2020.
You've supported him then politically. What were your feelings initially when you heard that he had been arrested on these charges, I guess before you had the opportunity to read the full indictment?
Yeah, I never believed that he would be corrupt, and that's the reason that I decided to get the full indictment. I mean, I am a law professor, so I'm inherently skeptical, I guess, when I hear about something like this. And I read the indictment, and then I was, I would not say surprised. I would say I was unsurprised when I read the indictment and saw that I didn't think that even if everything alleged in the indictment could be proved, that it really added up to a crime.
And so when we think about prosecutorial overreach in the U.S. Justice Department, particularly as it relates to recent arrest of Cincinnati City Council members, why is this one particularly striking to you when we think about the arrest and later the guilty plea and sentencing of Tamaya Dennard and also the charges against another member of council, Jeff Pastor?
Well, it's different. It's completely different from the Dennard case. Even though Dennard and Sittenfeld were closely associated with each other, Dennard was in financial distress. She contacted a lobbyist who had business before counsel. She said that she needed money, and she wanted a secret payment of money that she was going to put in her own pocket. And at least according to the indictment that she pled guilty to, that was a quid pro quo for her vote on a matter that was before counsel. So that's textbook bribery, and she pled guilty to it. In the Pastor case, similarly, Pastor was diverting all this money into his own pocket. Now, I think in his case, the developers, the same developers in the Sittenfeld case, it's in Duque, but the difference between the Pastor case and the Sittenfeld case is that Sittenfeld was asking for donations into a lawful political action committee and without a quid pro quo in exchange for any votes. He was asking for donations from someone whose interests he was in support of, regardless of whether he got the donation or not, because he thought that Duque's development was in the interests of the city of Cincinnati. Pastor, because he put the money in his own pocket and because, at least as alleged in the indictment, which has not been proved out yet, it was much more of a quid pro quo. I wasn't as alarmed by that, but it was really, as you suggested, it's because I knew Sittenfeld a little bit that I decided to read this indictment more carefully. But I am persuaded that those are the key differences.
Let's talk about the political action committee component to this indictment. This is where Councilman Sittenfeld wanted the donations to go. I want to read some piece of reporting from the Cincinnati Inquirer's Sharon Coolidge and Dan Horn. This is from earlier in November when this story was first breaking. Quote, by law, PACs such as this may support candidates and collect donations at significantly higher levels than allowed for individual candidates, but they cannot be run by or connected to those candidates. The indictment states the Progress and Growth PAC was operated solely by Sittenfeld, which would be illegal. What was your takeaway of that component from your legal scholar perspective?
Yeah, well, it's not strictly speaking true that a PAC can't be run by a candidate. It's just that a PAC can't be run by a candidate and used for the benefit of that candidate's own campaigns. So there are PACs called leadership PACs that are run by elected officials like Mitch McConnell or Nancy Pelosi, where they collect large amounts of money from donors, much larger than could be spent than could be donated to their own campaigns. But the key is that they don't spend the money on their own campaigns. So a leadership PAC can be collected by a candidate, controlled by a candidate, and spent either for administrative expenses like polling or travel, or else for the benefit of other candidates. Now, I looked at the Progress and Growth Foundation filings on the Federal Election Commission website, and it's a little bit ambiguous about whether it is a leadership PAC or not. But it is completely clear that the money has not been spent in support of Sittenfeld's campaigns. So I think that, I don't know why it doesn't straight up say that it's a leadership PAC, but the money's only been used in ways that are consistent with a leadership PAC. And a leadership PAC can, in fact, be controlled by a candidate.
We're joined by Ken Katkin, a professor of law at Chase College of Law at Northern Kentucky University, where he teaches legislation and constitutional law. He recently wrote an op-ed published in CityBeat with the headline, "Do P.G. Sittenfeld's Charges Represent Prosecutorial Overreach by a Politicized Trump Justice Department?" And so then we would have to find out, Ken, whether that Political Action Committee, Progress and Growth PAC, had expended any cash on Sittenfeld's campaigns for this to be a legal problem.
Well, we know that it didn't, so that's not something we have to find out. All of the revenues and all of the expenditures of that PAC are disclosed on the Federal Election Commission's website. It's an open public record, and mostly it's been building up a fund. It hasn't really been spending money on much of anything, but certainly it didn't spend any money on Sittenfeld's campaigns.
And there's no way to prove or even to allege intent, I suppose, then in that case, that this money was being collected for the mayoral campaign.
Right. I mean, I guess anyone can allege anything, but it's clear that no money was spent out of it on the mayoral campaign.
So based on that knowledge that you have after having read those documents, how does this get characterized as some type of illegal process?
Well, that's really why I wrote the op-ed. I don't think there's anything illegal about it. But, you know, the indictment does not allege noncompliance with any of the campaign finance laws. The indictment implicitly acknowledges that all of this was consistent with all the campaign finance laws. The indictment's allegation of crime is quid pro quo bribery.
Well, sure, but right? The indictment does characterize the conversations about the PAC as one that Sittenfeld secretly controlled.
Yeah. It does allege that, but it doesn't allege any violations of federal campaign finance law. It only alleges the bribery and extortion. So in other words, it doesn't allege that there was something improper about the PAC. It alleges that what was improper was what it calls a secret quid pro quo exchange, like what was alleged in the Pastor and Denard cases, where a vote is being purchased somehow, and in this case, that would be by supposedly secret contributions to a supposedly secret PAC. But the allegation does only really relate to bribery and extortion, and not to the structure of the PAC or to the size of the contributions to the PAC or to any aspects of expenditures from the PAC.
Can you help us understand the legal term honest services fraud, which is one of the charges here? You write that the prosecutorial overreach is starker in the indictment's treatment of Sittenfeld's promise to lobby his fellow council members to vote to approve Ndukwe's project.
Yeah, so honest services fraud is a federal crime. The idea is that if someone is an elected official, they owe a duty of honest services to the public, and that therefore, if they breach that duty to the public by not performing their jobs honestly, but by performing them corruptly or for their own personal benefit rather than for the public benefit, then that could be a crime. And that's one of the crimes that he's charged with. But the U.S. Supreme Court has had a number of opportunities to interpret that statute, and it's interpreted it very narrowly and very stringently. And in fact, in almost every case that's ever reached the Supreme Court where any elected official was convicted of that crime, the Supreme Court has a nearly unbroken streak of reversing those convictions. And I think the reason that's most relevant to the Sittenfeld case is in a very recent case called the McDonnell case. It involved Governor Robert McDonnell of Virginia. So McDonnell actually took, McDonnell and his wife accepted $175,000 worth of private gifts from one lobbyist. And in exchange for, which was all gifts that they put in their own pocket, or some of it was like private travel to the U.S. Open tennis match in New York, where they got to sit in box seats and then fly there on a private plane and back. So, you know, not money that's going into a PAC. This is money that's going directly for the benefit of Governor McDonnell. But what he did in exchange for that was he made a lot of phone calls to other elected officials on behalf of that lobbyist, trying to persuade other elected officials to do things that would benefit that lobbyist. And he was convicted by a jury of honest services fraud for that, where the theory of the prosecution was that Governor McDonnell, by making these phone calls to other government officials in his capacity as governor and trying to influence them to do something that would benefit this lobbyist that gave him all the gifts, that he had committed honest services fraud. But the U.S. Supreme Court, by a vote of 9-0, reversed that conviction. It was one of their only unanimous decisions of the last few years. And what they said in that case was that contacting other public officials on behalf of a donor can't be honest services fraud because it's not itself an official act. It's not an exercise of official government power. So if something like a vote was sold, then that would be honest services fraud. But if the idea is that because a donor has perhaps achieved the goodwill of an elected official to the extent that that elected official is willing to say a few good words about the donor, even to other elected officials in hopes that that'll help somehow with the donor's interests, that because there's no official act there, that can't be honest services fraud. And that's why I say Sittenfeld's calls to the other council members under the McDonnell decision can't be honest services fraud, even if it was done because it was a donor that wanted him to make those calls.
Ken, we've seen that Councilman Sittenfeld has pleaded not guilty. He's also posted statements on social media proclaiming his innocence and his plan to fight these charges. I guess if you were on the defense team, what do you see the chances as being based on what you've learned about the case?
The chances of
I guess
what exactly?
the chances I should yeah, be, yeah. I'm talking to an attorney. I guess the chances of beating these charges.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll beat them. What I'm not sure of is that that'll happen at the trial court, because I think it may require an appeal. And I was mentioning that the Supreme Court has reversed a lot of similar convictions, but of course people had to be convicted first before they got to the Supreme Court. And I think the difficulty here for Sittenfeld is that there's a lot of money in politics, and a lot of the public sees that as corrupt. Right. So the way that politicians have to go about fundraising, it's a major part of any elected official's job to raise funds for their political campaigns and for political action committees. They tend to raise funds as best they can from people or businesses that approve of the way they're doing their job, that approve of the way they're voting, and sometimes that's from self-interested businesses that see some benefit to themselves from the way a politician is doing their job. That whole thing looks a little bit corrupt to the public, but yet that's the way American political campaigns are financed. And so I think almost any time you just expose to the public the way political fundraising works, whether it's lawful or not, there's a risk that the jury is not going to like what they see and they're going to convict. But I think at the appellate level, where the court will really be looking at the way the Supreme Court has interpreted these statutes and whether there was a violation of them, I think it's extremely likely that if Sittenfeld ever gets convicted by a jury, that conviction is going to be reversed on appeal.
Ken Katkin is a professor of law at Chase College of Law at Northern Kentucky University, where he teaches legislation and constitutional law. You can read his recent op-ed about Councilman P.G. Sittenfeld's arrest and allegations of prosecutorial overreach by the Justice Department at citybeat.com. We've also got a link to his op-ed at wvxu.org inside the Cincinnati Edition tab. Ken, thank you so much for the time you gave us.
Thanks for having me.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Our technical director is Josh Elstro. This theme music was composed by Rob Vetters. You can find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks. We'll talk again tomorrow.